this NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week. We're going to talk about some state and local political issues. We'll take your emails, too, while the program is on the air. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. First, one listener comment about last Friday's program. Last Friday, we heard excerpts of the testimony of Peter Strzok, the FBI agent who's at the center of a lot of attacks from Fox News. And here's what one listener had to say.
This is John Foster in Boca Grande. I just heard an excerpt from the fellow from the FBI that was being questioned, and it made me realize that here you have the FBI, and they have all these qualifications and training and such, but the real problem, it seems, these days is that there's no qualification or standards for someone who wants to be a politician. Any yahoo can get in there regardless of their capability. You know, it's like a popularity contest. Truthfully, a plumber or electrician has to go through much more training to practice their craft in comparison to a politician. And how would you ever deal with that aspect? Just the way it is, I guess. But anyhow, keep up the good work.
A listener comment that came in after Friday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to talk about some of the big state issues and some of the big local issues next on Florida This Week. And as you listen back to this replay of the program, which airs on WEDU-TV on Friday nights, you can email us. The email address here at the studio is dj@wmnf.org. Coming up next, rising water levels in Lake Okeechobee pose danger to Florida's east and west coasts. Questions raised about whether Governor Scott is still controlling his personal business dealings while in office. The Tampa Bay Rays dream big with a new stadium design for a proposed site in Ybor City. And the problems with the concealed weapons permit screening process are deeper than previously reported. Political insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Jim Davis is an attorney and a former U.S. congressman and a Democrat. Brendan McLaughlin is an independent journalist. Allison Graves is a writer for the Tampa Bay Times and PolitiFact Florida. And Mike Fasano is the Pasco County tax collector and a Republican. Well, so nice to have you here. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Roger.
Well, things got bad, so bad this week at Lake Okeechobee that the Army Corps of Engineers has resumed releasing water from the lake to take pressure off the aging dike that holds back the water from flooding cities and farms to the south. Not only is the lake at dangerously high levels, but it's covered with algae. Governor Rick Scott issued an emergency order to help counties affected by an algae bloom that's sending the toxic green slime to sensitive estuaries downstream, the Caloosahatchee River, which runs through Fort Myers on the west coast, and the St. Lucie River on the east coast. Lake Okeechobee is the nation's second largest natural freshwater lake, and algae blooms have been a problem for years, fed by nutrients from the cattle ranches and farms surrounding the lake, along with housing developments and cities to the north. Currently, the lake is at dangerously high levels because of the summer rains, and when that water is released, it sends algae downstream, which kills fish and hurts tourism. The chronic problems of the lake have been known for years, and now it's become an issue in both the U.S. Senate race and the race for governor. And the question is, have Florida's political leaders done enough over the years to fix the problem?
And Allison's become central in the race for U.S. Senate between the governor and Bill Nelson, who's running for re-election. And a lot of people, there's a lot of finger pointing as if to say, okay, the problem is you haven't fixed the dike,
yeah,
or the problem is you don't do anything about septic tanks. But is there a single source of the problem for the algae?
That's really tough to say, but Florida really has the perfect recipe for this algae bloom to really get going. So we have warm water, we have warm temperatures, and we, of course, have pollution. And when those things exist, we're going to see things like this crop up. Of course, with Hurricane Irma last year, we had a lot of rainfall from that. In May, we had record rainfall for May this year. So when we have more rain, of course, there's going to be more runoff, and these algae blooms we're going to see increase. And like you said, the Democrats are blaming Republicans. Republicans are blaming Democrats. So Republicans like to say that it's Obama administration not taking care of the dike around the area, where these Democrats are blaming, you know, Florida Agricultural Commissioner Adam Putnam and Florida Governor Rick Scott for just inaction over the last 7 or so years.
Well, Jim, you were up in the legislature before you went to Congress. Did you deal with the question? Did the state legislature back in your day when you were in Tallahassee, did you deal with the question of Lake Okeechobee?
I did, and it's critical to have a partnership to make this work. And in Congress, Democrats and Republicans continue to work together to send the money to Florida. But the failures here at the state level, the governor and the legislature, the Republicans control, have presided over reduced funding for the Everglades, changing the water standards, which raise the level of nitrogen, which causes the algae. So the state has failed to live up to their share of responsibility, and that's what we're seeing right now.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you also served in Tallahassee.
Yes.
What would you say about Tallahassee's role in not fixing this problem that's been going on for years?
I agree with Jim. I think that's it was very much neglected over the years. What's interesting today, though, is you wonder, would there been an executive order by the governor if it was not an election year? We're all of a sudden seeing both, as pointed out, Democrats and Republicans using this as a political issue, which is the wrong thing to do. But all of a sudden now we're seeing these executive orders being written and given out by the governor regarding this issue. Where was everybody a couple of years ago?
Yeah, now the crisis is happening. They're focused on it.
Yes.
It's the perfect pass the buck sort of issue, because there's so many agencies involved and so many business interests involved in the economy up there. But the stakes are very high. There's 37,000 people that live, that will be flooded out if one of those dikes fail. There's also the tourism aspect on the East Coast. And the current plan that the Corps of Army Engineers is working on now is to build a $1.4 billion reservoir to contain the guacamole to keep it out of the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows that the inaction, the inability, the refusal to enforce environmental regulations becomes very expensive.
Jim, I was talking to a scientist from Audubon of Florida this week, and he said there's several major components to the algae. He says it's the cattle ranches and agriculture surrounding the lake, and then we straightened out the Kissimmee River so it doesn't meander and it doesn't filter. That's being restored right now as we speak. The wetlands, too, to the north of Lake Okeechobee, that's a problem because we've destroyed a lot of wetlands to build housing developments, and you've got runoff from houses and retail north of Lake Okeechobee that's just fueling the algae growth in the lake.
In some ways, it's pretty simple. It's about a concentration of nitrate and other chemicals, and it's the product of the Everglades need to be spread out further so the water can spread over a broader area. And it's also the intensity of the chemicals, as there's been more runoff from the South Florida and for animal waste and from the sugar industry. So there's a way to deal with it, but it takes a long-term commitment of Democrats and Republicans. It's a South Florida Water Management District, the state, and the federal government. The federal government's living up to their share of responsibility. Governor Scott has not. He has appointed people to the Water Management District who do not have a public interest. They're more of the vested interests we just talked about. And it's been neglected, and now we're paying the price.
And Mike, some people have suggested in Tallahassee and elsewhere, it's a quick fix. If we've just fixed the dike problem, mm-hmm, around the lake, then we don't have to worry about the dike breaching, and
right,
we can contain the algae, just keep it in
certainly
the lake.
Certainly. It's an investment that we need to make. We failed, unfortunately, for years. We used dollars for other reasons, for other purposes, instead of putting money where it should be, and we probably wouldn't have much of this problem today.
All right. Well, last year, Governor Rick Scott and his family saw a big increase in income when an automotive components company that they owned was sold to a Japanese firm for $825 million. Since becoming governor, Scott has shielded his assets from public scrutiny by using a blind trust and a series of privately held partnerships in his name and the name of his wife.
The assets in Scott's trust are supposed to be blind to him and managed by an independent trustee. But two people with ties to Governor Scott, a son-in-law and his longtime financial advisor, sat on the board of the automotive components company. According to the Tampa Bay Times and the Miami Herald, when the governor led an official state trade delegation to Japan in 2013, he met two of the would-be bidders in the sale of his firm, Mitsubishi and Teijin. Teijin was the company that eventually purchased the automotive company from Scott's family, resulting in the huge profit. A spokesperson for the governor, though, says the governor has no knowledge of anything that is bought or changed in the trust.
Mike, do we have any reason to believe that the governor knew about the sale of this family-owned company to the Japanese firm?
There's no proof of that, but certainly his former son-in-law did. Certainly his partner, the person who's doing the investments for him, did. Both of them sat on the board. There's great concern, and perception is everything in politics. And when you have two individuals who you're very close with, one being someone who you're related to, making these deals. Also, what was pointed out was that as these investments are being made, not only in that company but other investments, the family members were making those same investments. Now, you're telling me that the family members weren't speaking to their father-in-law or their father or their husband? One of the things that needs to be changed here is that more transparency, more openness, but most importantly, a spouse needs to also show what investments he or she has.
And that's not required by the state?
Absolutely not, and that's wrong. I mean, I know of elected officials who have put things in their spouse's name so it doesn't have to be reported on their disclosure in July of every year. That's wrong. Those investments, those assets need to be disclosed as well. So people know exactly what you own, what assets you have, regardless if they're yours or your wife's, because guess what? They're both of yours. And that needs to be known by the public.
The governor put his investments in a blind trust. Is that adequate?
It's not nearly adequate. How blind is the trust? That's the next question. And we see from this sale of this company where they made tens of millions of dollars, where two people who were very close and one being related to the governor sat on that board. That's not very blind, in my opinion.
Well, I guess what looks bad is that the governor did go 3 years before the sale of the company to Japan, met with two of the companies, were bidding for the company that he owned, and then ultimately...
Well, yeah, how blind can it be? I mean, some of these investments predate his time in office, so he can assume that he still is invested in these things. Open the paper, watch CNBC for a few minutes, and you can get updated on your investments. I mean, yeah. It can't be. The thing that fascinates me about this is the fact that much of the public is unconcerned with this. And in fact, a lot of supporters of people like Rick Scott and Donald Trump, for that matter, see great wealth as a qualification for office for two reasons. One, they believe that wealth is de facto evidence of competence. They're successful. And this notion that really, really rich people are incorruptible somehow. But of course, the cabinet of the president lately shows that this petty corruption puts a lie to that.
Well, Jim, I think that's exactly right. I think we want our politicians to be successful, but at the same time, we don't want them to use their power in office to advance their moneyed interests.
I strongly agree with Mike, and as a former legislator like Mike, it's very important, particularly for an executive, a president or governor, who has so much discretion, and it's difficult to know what their motives are when they make decisions about awarding contracts. The solution here is what Mike said. We ought to change the state law so that if a spouse has assets, that has to be disclosed along with the office holder. I think that's the federal standard. At the end of July or so, the governor's going to have to file a financial disclosure form that discloses his wife's assets as part of being a candidate for the U.S. Senate. That will tell more of the tale here. It's also a standard we ought to have in Florida for the next governor.
Allison, this has become an issue in the very close race between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson in the race for U.S. Senate. In most of the polls that are out there, the real clear average Real Clear Politics average. Scott is up by 2%. What's your take on the race right now? I mean, most of the polls for the last few months have been showing Scott in the lead.
Yeah, so I don't make much of polls this far out or in general a lot of the times as a political reporter, but I think one thing that I can speak to is the fact that Governor Rick Scott was very quickly out the gate producing advertisements, and he was also, campaigning with the Hispanic population. He's visited Puerto Rico, I think, more than six times now, and he had his ads, on those Spanish-speaking radio broadcasts and everything. So he's really made a big push with campaigning, especially with Hispanics. That said, the poll's margin of error is so close that it's really such a close race. I think both Nelson and Scott have a lot more work to do before the election. Nelson should continue to play up his Senate accomplishments, and Governor Rick Scott really needs to bring home his accomplishments as a governor with jobs and the economy, and then it's really up to voters to decide whether they think Scott deserves credit for bringing Florida out of the recession.
Last I looked, Scott and his allies were vastly outspending Nelson mm-hmm. and his allies. So is it too late for Nelson? The election isn't until November, but is it too late for Nelson to change his image or to begin, because Scott has really hammered Nelson.
Yeah, with the advertising.
Yeah.
That's completely true, and he's outspent him too. I think Nelson in August will see a lot more campaigning from him if I was a betting
woman. But is that too late to start in August?
I'm not a political consultant, but it's later than Governor Rick Scott started.
Yeah. Let me ask the two experts, both of you, experienced politicians. Yeah. Is it too late?
Think about, you made a very good point. The amount of money that Rick Scott and his campaign has spent already. Think about the amount of money, and he's only up 2 points. He's only up 2 points with so many more months to go and so much more campaigning, and it is my opinion that this will come down to the wire, no question about it. But the money that he has spent, the time and effort he's put into it to go to Puerto Rico, to reach out to certain groups, and he's only up by 2 points. And Nelson doesn't have that big of a well-known name, if you will.
Right.
I think it's going to depend on turnout come November.
Jim, what do you think?
This is the pre-season. Regular folks aren't paying attention yet. And when they do, they're going to judge what people have done, not just what they're saying in these TV ads. What happened in Puerto Rico was a tragedy. This isn't about how many times Rick's Governor Scott went to the airport. It's about what did he do when the president was failing to do his job with FEMA. That happened in Florida. There would have been a huge outcry. Ultimately, what's going to happen in this campaign is Governor Scott's going to be associated with President Trump, because until the election season started, he wasn't there to stand up to President Trump on Puerto Rico or any of these other issues. Mm-hmm. And if you're happy with President Trump, if you don't think he needs a check and balance or adult supervision, you'll vote for Governor Scott. But a lot of this campaign is going to be a referendum on the president.
Rob, to your question as to whether it's too early or too late,
right,
keep in mind that Rick Scott, in both his last campaigns, injected huge amounts of money at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And the races were close, so you could argue that that really did make a difference. It's never too late
to spend. But the pushback on this is every Florida race statewide, at least like this, is going to be close. It's going to be decided within 100,000 votes or less.
Isn't
right?
it just a little bit, Nelson's fault as well? How long has he been in office? And really, can you state one huge success, that accomplishment that he has made after all these years? And that's the point that Rick Scott is trying to get across here. However, Nelson's got a lot of, has got a lot of time to tell people what he's done. But really, could anyone, any average citizen, sit down and have a conversation and talk about the accomplishments by Nelson?
Okay. Do you want to wrap up?
Oh, I'm not an average citizen, but I've done enough reporting on Nelson's accomplishments, and I think some of the key things is writing the bipartisan law that made it illegal to drill off Florida's coast. Right isn't the perfect word, but he really laid the foundation and was the inspiration for that. So I definitely understand your point, though. Nelson has been not as forthcoming with all of his right. accomplishments. He hasn't provided those sound bites like Governor Rick Scott has about everything he's accomplished over the years. So I think something Nelson is going to need to do is kind of wrap up for everyone, hey, this is what I've been doing in the Senate, and this is why it affects Floridians.
Okay. Well, the Tampa Bay Rays baseball team this week unveiled the design for a new proposed stadium to be located in Ybor City.
The entire project is expected to cost more than $900 million, with $91 million to be used to develop the surrounding area. The new facility, called the Tampa Bay Rays Ballpark, will have a translucent roof topped by a distinctive wing-like canopy. It will seat about 28,000 and will have an adjacent parking garage.
It really provides the first opportunity for a direct link between the downtown corridor and Ybor City by way of a true commercial district.
Team owner Stu Sternberg said the team will contribute more than $150 million toward building the new ballpark. The success of redeveloping the surrounding Ybor City area will be critical.
The revenue that comes from the activity that takes place in these facilities is real. The question becomes, at the end of the day, how much stays within the community?
With little appetite from the public, though, to pay for the facility with taxes, Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn says the team will need to find creative ways to fund the project.
So, Brendan, I don't think there's any politician that's come out to say that we really like the idea of using tax dollars
Mayor Bob Buckhorn said specifically the opposite, that
right.
Chances are there won't be any broad
How do they
taxes.
Pay for it?
Well, that's the question. $900 million really focuses the mind. You know, I'm not a baseball fan particularly, but I live close enough to that area to where I would hear them singing, "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." It's with the team throwing out numbers like $150 million, $200 million, that doesn't come close to cutting it. I just don't think 20% of the cost of this thing is going to wash with anybody. There's a basket of little taxes, rental cars and bed taxes and things like that that they can dip into. But it just doesn't add up at this point. So, I mean, smarter people than I can figure out ways to pay for something like this.
Jim, what's your sense about the local political leaders? Are they in the mood to help subsidize the team, or do you think that this is going to be a tough sell for the team owners?
I think the mayor's critical in this. There needs to be somebody who is representing the public interest, who's looking at it through that standard. There are baseball fans out there, and some of them will vote for taxes. I agree with Brendan, there won't be a tax on the ballot for that.
Yeah.
But it also helps Tampa, and it helps the region in terms of economic development. It will generate a lot of increased value around that. There are ways that local government can take the money from that and use it to cover the cost of the stadium. But unless the owner is willing to put up a lot more money, I don't think you even get to that. And I think this conversation needs to speed up, and people need to start being more specific and honest about what they're willing to do to make it work.
And Mike, what's your sense? Because there's all sorts of, there's interest on the right, the Koch brothers and others, and there's interest on the left, progressives who say we shouldn't subsidize team owners. That they, they've got a team that's worth maybe
a
billion.
I think both conservatives and liberals are probably on this on the same same tune, if you will. They don't want corporate welfare. They don't want dollars being spent for a baseball team when other things need to be, those dollars need to be something different to be used for. I'd love for them to come on to Pasco County, right up the road.
But how would they pay for the stadium? All right. Well, the problem with the state's background check system for concealed weapons permits at the Department of Agriculture appears to be deeper than previously thought.
The Associated Press reported this week that a 2012 internal investigation found that 48 Florida State employees made mistakes in issuing permits for concealed weapons, security guards, and other similar licenses, in some cases not even looking at the applications. The records add to revelations of lapses in the concealed carry permitting process that have drawn criticism for Department Commissioner Adam Putnam as he runs for governor in the wake of February's Parkland school shooting, which brought gun safety to the forefront of the political debate. In a separate report, the Tampa Bay Times says that a critical step in background checks was left to overwhelmed mailroom employees who had little understanding of the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. Putnam's campaign says that the Agriculture Commissioner dealt with the problems and that when necessary, concealed weapons permits were revoked.
So, Jim, this only came out because reporters put in public records requests. There was no press conference at the Department of Agriculture saying, oh, we got a problem, but we fixed it. It's the reporters that are dogging this story. I'm just going back, and you know Tallahassee pretty well, going back, do departments typically try to keep this stuff covered up if there's an inspector general's report, or do they have a press conference and say, look, we screwed up, but we're going to fix it?
I think the culture these days in Tallahassee is the public's not entitled to know a lot of things that are controversial. The legislature doesn't really debate a lot of these issues in the open right now. But generally when the spotlight is shined, people are forthcoming. That has not been the case in this situation. What Commissioner Putnam needs to do is to be very forthcoming about this. The first mistake they made was it wasn't a priority. And now they're being defensive, which doesn't give confidence to the public the problem won't happen again. So eventually the truth's going to come out here, and they need to be very transparent and very clear about what happened to assure folks it won't happen again. And it's also going to be an issue in the governor's race.
And Mike, I mean, this thing is snowballing a little bit. It started off with the Tampa Bay Times report, and then other media outlets have been reporting it. Every week there seems to be a new revelation about the expanding problems within the department.
You know, I learned in politics a long time ago, when you make a mistake, you own up to it, you admit it, you apologize, and you move forward.
And the public accepts that. They like that.
The public will accept that. But when you continue to be on the defensive and blames one person in the department, and we later find out that it's not just that one person, put the blame on one individual, when it's the departments, you're the leader of that department. Take the blame, apologize, and move on. And that's what's wrong with politics today, both in Washington and Tallahassee. They want to blame someone else. There's no taking responsibility when something happens, and I think when you do that, and this is a perfect example, it's only going to continue to blow up on you.
All right. Well, before we go, what other big news story should we be paying attention to? Brendan, let's start with you. Your other big
story. I came across a study by Price Economics that looked at the rate of fatal police shootings, and they looked at the top 100 cities in the country. Number one, St. Louis. Number two, Orlando, Florida. But Orlando, Florida's crime rate is much lower than St. Louis's, so it suggests that, in a way, Orlando's number one relative to the type of market it is. Tampa, about middle of the pack, 39.
Mm-hmm. You think that kind of thing might come up in the mayor's race next year?
I mean, there's nothing really to crow about or to, you know, be particularly concerned about with Tampa, because we're in the rate. But here in Florida, you know, you've got to wonder why a city like Orlando, which doesn't have this sort of reputation necessarily, has got a police force that uses lethal force at a rate higher than virtually every other city in the country.
All right, Mike, your other big story.
Every year, every election year, the newspapers, particularly the Tampa Bay Times, sends out a questionnaire to the candidates to answer and return to the newspaper. They're able to use that to tell the public what this candidate stands for. I hear, and sadly hear, that some Republicans who are running for the Florida House have decided not to return that questionnaire. And for whatever reason, I don't know, but I think it's stupid on their part. I think they have a responsibility to turn that questionnaire in so it can be reported what you stand for, how you stand on different issues, and how you're going to solve the problems of the state. I would encourage my Republicans who are thinking twice or maybe not deciding not to turn that questionnaire, turn that questionnaire in, and so the people who you're asking for their vote from know exactly how you stand on an issue.
All right, Allison, your other big story.
Governor Scott, he signed an executive order telling local municipalities not to enforce this new beach law, or at least that's what it seems. So this is a whole new step in this beach law saga, which we know is already so confusing. And, you know, it was supposed to take effect July 1st. And so now with this new executive order, we really have no clue what is going to happen with private access on beaches. And so that's what I'm going to be next week just trying to figure out.
Ironically, he signed the beach trespass bill into law.
Yeah,
so now he signs an executive order.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to get to the bottom of it in the Times.
Yeah, all right.
Jim, your other big story.
For a change, I'd like to offer some relief from the news and encourage people to go see a wonderful movie I just saw, Won't You Be My Neighbor? It's the story of Fred Rogers, an ordained minister, registered Republican, who cared not just about his children, but everybody's children. Remind us how to be good parents, good neighbors, and good citizens. We all need our batteries recharged a little bit, and
exactly.
He can do it.
And show us how to be kind to each other.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftwwedu.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night. And my guests on that program were former Congressman Jim Davis, a Democrat, and a former state senator and state representative Mike Fasano. He was the Republican on that panel. Allison Graves writes for PolitiFact Florida, and Brendan McLaughlin is an independent journalist right now. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard during the past few minutes, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. President Trump and Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin are holding a press conference right now, and let's listen in on that press conference to see what was said after their two-hour meeting this morning in Helsinki.
I do feel that we have both made some mistakes. I think that the probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it. People are being brought out to the fore. So far that I know, virtually none of it related to the campaign. And they're going to have to try really hard to find somebody that did relate to the campaign. That was a clean campaign. I beat Hillary Clinton easily. And frankly, we beat her. And I'm not even saying from the standpoint, we won that race. And it's a shame that there could even be a little bit of a cloud over it. People know that, people understand it, but the main thing, and we discussed this also, is zero collusion. And it has had a negative impact upon the relationship of the two largest nuclear powers in the world. We have 90% of nuclear power between the two countries. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous what's going on with the probe.
For President Putin, if I could follow up as well, why should Americans and why should President Trump believe your statement that Russia did not intervene in the 2016 election, given the evidence that U.S. intelligence agencies have provided? And will you consider extraditing the 12 Russian officials that were indicted last week by a U.S. grand jury?
Well, I'm going to let the president answer the second part of that question. But as you know, the whole concept of that came up perhaps a little bit before, but it came out as a reason why the Democrats lost an election, which, frankly, they should have been able to win, because the Electoral College is much more advantageous for Democrats, as you know, than it is to Republicans. We won the Electoral College by a lot, 306 to 223, I believe, and that was a well-fought, that was a well-fought battle. We did a great job. And frankly, I'm going to let the president speak to the second part of your question. But just to say it one time again, and I say it all the time, there was no collusion. I didn't know the president. There was nobody to collude with. There was no collusion with the campaign. And every time you hear all of these, you know, 12 and 14, it's stuff that has nothing to do. And frankly, they admit these are not people involved in the campaign. But to the average reader out there, they're saying, well, maybe that does. It doesn't. And even the people involved, some perhaps told misstories, although in one case the FBI said there was no lie. There was no lie. Somebody else said there was. We ran a brilliant campaign, and that's why I'm president. Thank you.
По поводу того, кому верить и кому не верить, и можно ли вообще верить.
Believed, who's not to be believed.
Никому нельзя верить.
You can trust no one.
С чего вы взяли, что президент Трамп мне доверяет, а я ему полностью доверяю. Он защищает интересы Соединенных Штатов Америки. Я защищаю интересы Российской Федерации. У нас есть совпадающие интересы. Мы ищем точки соприкосновения. У нас есть вопросы, в которых мы пока расходимся. И мы ищем варианты, как примирить эти расхождения, как сделать нашу работу конструктивной. Мы должны опираться не на сиюминутные политические интересы каких-то внутренних политических сил в наших странах, а на факты. Назовите мне хотя бы один факт, который говорит о каком-то сговоре в ходе предвыборной кампании в Соединенных Штатах. Это полный бред. Мне были знакомы, президент только об этом сказал. То, что в российском обществе в ходе избирательной кампании в Соединенных Штатах сложилось определенное мнение в отношении кандидата, но это само собой разумеется, чего здесь необычно. Президент Трамп в качестве сегодняшнего президента, в качестве кандидата, говорил о необходимости восстановления российско-американских отношений. Но, естественно, в российском обществе возникла симпатия к этому кандидату. И разные люди по-разному могли эту симпатию проявлять. Ну, разве это не естественно? Иметь симпатию к человеку, который хочет выстроить отношения с нашей страной. Нормально. Вот мы слышали обвинение в адрес фирмы «Конкорд». Насколько мне известно, эта фирма наняла адвокатов американских, и все обвинения в ее адрес рассыпаются в американском суде. Но вы посмотрите, что в судах на американском происходит. Вот на что надо опираться. Они нас слушают. Это первое. Второе, что касается вот этих 12 сотрудников якобы наших спецслужб. Я об этом ничего пока не знаю. Мне нужно еще выяснить, о чем там идет речь. Значит, но президент поставил этот вопрос передо мной тоже. Что я могу сказать?
And I will look into it. So far, I can say the following.
Но вот что мне приходит в голову и что я могу предложить. У нас существует действующий договор между Соединенными Штатами Америки и Российской Федерацией от 1999 года. Договор о взаимной помощи по уголовным делам. Этот договор работающий. Кстати говоря, эффективно работает. По запросам иностранных государств до сотни, 150 дел возбуждаем уголовных в России. Несколько лет назад наш бывший министр атомной промышленности был выдан Соединенными Штатами в Российскую Федерацию и был осужден российским судом. Это работающий договор. Этим договором предусмотрены определенные процедуры совместной работы. Мы можем предложить, чтобы соответствующая ваша комиссия, которую возглавляет спецпрокурор, Мюллер, значит, вот он может в рамках этого договора направить нам официальный запрос с целью провести допросы тех людей, которые считают виновными в совершении каких-то правонарушений. Сотрудники нашей прокуратуры и следственных органов эти допросы могут провести и направить соответствующие материалы в Соединенные Штаты. Значит, более того, мы можем сделать еще один шаг навстречу. Мы можем допустить официальных представителей Соединенных Штатов, в том числе этой комиссии, присутствует на этих допросах. Но тогда в этом случае мы, безусловно, будем ставить вопрос о том, чтобы эти действия были взаимны. Мы тогда будем ожидать от американской стороны, чтобы они допросили тех официальных лиц, в том числе представителей спецслужб Соединенных Штатов, которых мы подозреваем в совершении противоправных действий на территории Российской Федерации, в присутствии наших следователей. Что я имею в виду? Ну, известное дело фирмы «Армидаж Капитал», господина Браудер. По данным нашего следствия, группа лиц, деловые партнеры господина Браудера, незаконным образом заработали в России более полутора миллиардов долларов. Не заплатили налоги ни в России, ни в Соединенных Штатах. Но деньги эти в Соединенные Штаты перевели. 400 миллионов долларов направили на избирательную кампанию госпожи Клинтон. Это официальные данные, которые в их отчете. 400 миллионов компаний. Но это их дело. Они сделали, возможно, это легально. Но деньги получены нелегально. У нас есть основания полагать, что некоторые сотрудники спецслужб Соединенных Штатов сопровождали эти сделки незаконно. Но это вот только один шаг. Но мы можем поговорить и о расширении нашего сотрудничества. Пожалуйста, варианты возможны, они предусмотрены в соответствующем межправительственном соглашении.
President Putin, did you want President Trump to win the election, and did you direct any of your officials to help him do that?
Да, я хотел, чтобы он выиграл. Потому что он говорил о нормализации российско-американских отношений.
Продолжаем. Я думаю, вполне вопросы три может задать кто-то из российского пула.
Давайте, Russia Today, вперед.
Спасибо большое.
Thank you so much.
Добрый вечер. Меня зовут Илья Петренко. Как ты сегодня сказал, телеканал RT. First question for Mr. Trump in English. Mr. President. Would you please go into the details of possibly any specific arrangements for the U.S. to work together with Russia in Syria, if any of these kind of arrangements were made today or discussed? И если позволите, Владимир Владимирович, тоже вопрос на русском. Поскольку сегодня несколько раз уже затрагивалась тема футбола, я на футбольном языке задам вопрос. Господин Помпео чуть ранее сказал, что когда разговор заходит о взаимодействии в Сирии, сейчас мяч на стороне России. Владимир Владимирович, это действительно так? И в таком случае, если да, как вы этим владением воспользовались? Спасибо. Thank you.
Well, I guess I'll answer the first part of the question. We've worked with Israel long and hard for many years, many decades. I think we've never has anyone, any country been closer than we are. President Putin also is helping Israel, and we both spoke with Bibi Netanyahu, and they would like to do certain things with respect to Syria, having to do with the safety of Israel. So in that respect, we absolutely would like to work in order to help Israel, and Israel will be working with us, so both countries would work jointly. And I think that when you look at all of the progress that's been made in certain sections with the eradication of ISIS, we're about 98%, 99% there, and other things that have taken place that we've done, and that, frankly, Russia has helped us with in certain respects. But I think that working with Israel is a great thing, and creating safety for Israel is something that both President Putin and I would like to see very much. One little thing I might add to that is the helping of people. Helping of people, because you have such horrible, if you see, and I've seen reports and I've seen pictures, I've seen just about everything. And if we can do something to help the people of Syria get back into some form of shelter and on a humanitarian basis, and that's what the word was, really, a humanitarian basis. I think that both of us would be very interested in doing that, and we are. We will do that. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, but for now, no specific agreements, for instance, between the militaries?
Well, our militaries do get along. In fact, our militaries actually have gotten along probably better than our political leaders for years, but our militaries do get along very well, and they do coordinate in Syria and other places. Okay? Thank you.
Мы говорили, я уже упоминал об этом, о сотрудничестве по гуманитарному направлению, в гуманитарной сфере. Только вчера я обсуждал этот вопрос с президентом Франции, господином Макроном, и мы с ним договорились о том, что мы и с европейскими странами, в том числе с Францией, активизируем эту работу. Мы со своей стороны готовы предоставлять военно-транспортные самолеты для гуманитарных грузов. Говорили об этом сегодня с президентом Трампом, думаю, что здесь есть над чем поработать. Что важно, огромное количество беженцев сконцентрировано сейчас в приграничных Сирии государствах, в Турции, в Ливане, в Иордании. Если мы окажем людям помощь для возвращения к родным очагам, то миграционное давление на страны Европейского Союза, на другие страны, оно многократно может уменьшиться. Считаю, это чрезвычайно важно, важно со всех точек зрения, и гуманитарной, и вот, с точки зрения решения проблем по беженцам. Ну а в целом, действительно, я согласен с президентом, наша военная работает весьма успешно друг с другом. Надеюсь, что им удастся договариваться так, как это было до сих пор. Мы будем работать и в астанинском формате, имею в виду Россию, Турцию и Иран. Я об этом сегодня тоже проинформировал на Дональда. Но мы готовы сопрягать эти усилия с усилиями так называемой малой группы государств для того, чтобы процесс приобрел такой широкий характер и чтобы у нас было максимальные шансы на окончательный успех. Да, что касается того, что мяч на нашей стороне по Сирии. Вот господин президент только что говорил о том, что мы закончили и успешно провели чемпионат мира по футболу. Господин президент, этот мяч передать, теперь мяч на его стороне. Тем более, что США должны будут проводить чемпионат мира
2026 года. That will go to my son Baron. We have no question. In fact, Melania, here you go. Okay.
The final question from the United States will go to Jonathan Lemire from the AP.
Thank you. Thank you. Question for each president. President Trump, yes. You first. Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
So let me just say that we have two thoughts. You have groups that are wondering why the FBI never took the server. Why haven't they taken the server? Why was the FBI told to leave the office of the Democratic National Committee? I've been wondering that. I've been asking that for months and months, and I've been tweeting it out and calling it out on social media. Where is the server? I want to know, where is the server, and what is the server saying? With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me, and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties. I really believe that this will probably go on for a while, but I don't think it can go on without finding out what happened to the server. What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails, gone, just gone. I think in Russia they wouldn't be gone so easily. I think it's a disgrace that we can't get Hillary Clinton's 33,000 emails. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer. Okay? Thank you.
Позвольте мне добавить два слова.
I'd like to add something to this.
Я ведь тоже работал в разведке.
After all, I was an intelligence officer myself.
И знаю, как составляются соответствующие досье.
And I do know how dossiers are made up.
Just a moment.
Just.
Это первое.
That's the first thing.
Второе.
Now the second thing.
Я считаю Россию демократическим государством.
I believe that Russia is a democratic
Надеюсь,
state.
Вы не отказываете
and
в этом и своей стране, Соединенным Штатам Америки.
This right to your own country. You're not
Соединенные
denying
Штаты демократическое
United States
государство.
Is a democracy. Do you believe United States is a democracy?
А если это так,
and if so,
то
if it is a democratic
окончательный
state,
вывод
then the
в споре подобного рода может вынести только суд,
can only be
а не оперативные службы.
By the court,
вот
not by the
компания, о которой я упоминал, Concord, одного из наших рестораторов, он ресторанным бизнесом занимает, обвиняют в вмешательстве. Но они не представляют российское государство. Даже если так, могу себе представить. Ну и что? Я уже приводил пример. У вас есть много людей, в том числе с большим миллиардным состоянием, с Пенсорсом, например. Тот везде вмешивается. Но это что? Это разве позиция американского государства? Нет. Это позиция частного лица. Вот так и здесь. Есть разбирательство в американском суде. Конечная инстанция всегда только суд.
And
пусть разбираются, посмотрим. Это касается частных только лиц. Уже не государства. А последнее обвинение в отношении якобы сотрудников наших спецслужб, пожалуйста, я же на это ответил. Есть межправосоглашение. Присылайте, пожалуйста, официальный запрос. Пусть комиссия МИД пришлет вам запрос. Мы проведем соответствующую работу и ответим. Можно и расширить это сотрудничество, я уже сказал. Но тогда только на взаимной основе. Мы тогда тоже будем ждать от американской стороны доступа к тем лицам, которых мы считаем сотрудниками спецслужб. Давайте предметно обсуждать и не использовать российско-американские отношения в качестве разменной карты во внутриполитической американской борьбе.
A question for President Putin. Thank you. Two questions for you, sir. Can you tell me what President Trump may have indicated to you about officially recognizing Crimea as part of Russia? And then secondly, sir, does the Russian government have any compromising material on President Trump or his family?
Значит, президента Трампа позиция по Крыму известна, и он ее придерживается. Он говорит о незаконности присоединения Крыма к Российской Федерации. У нас другая точка зрения. Мы считаем, что мы провели референдум в строгом соответствии с международным правом, с уставом Организации Объединенных Наций. Для нас, для Российской Федерации, вопрос закрыт. Первое. Второе, что касается каких-то компроматов. Вот я слышал об этом. Якобы мы собирали компромат на господина Трампа, когда он приезжал в Москву. Уважаемые коллеги, когда господин Трамп приезжал в Москву, я даже не знал, что он там находится. Я с уважением отношусь к президенту Трампу, как к главе американского государства. Но когда он приезжал в качестве бизнесмена, я даже не знал, что он находится в Москве. Вот на Петербургский экономический форум в Петербург приехало свыше 500 американских бизнесменов, причем самого высокого ранга. Я даже по фамилии их не вспомнил. И что вы думаете, мы по каждому из них организуем оперативную работу, собираем какой-то компромат?
Больше
ерунды трудно себе представить. Выбросите, пожалуйста, эту шелуху из головы.
Well, please just disregard the issues and don't think about this anymore again.
And I have to say, if they had it, it would have been out long ago. And if anybody watched Peter Strzok testify over the last couple of days, and I was in Brussels watching it, it was a disgrace to the FBI. It was a disgrace to our country. And you would say that was a total witch hunt. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Well, that's the concludes the live press conference that Russian President Vladimir Putin and our President Donald Trump just concluded in Helsinki after their two-hour meeting in Finland this morning. You heard Vladimir Putin say that Russia is a democratic state, and also there was news that Putin told the reporters that were asking questions. Putin said that he would be willing to have his intelligence officers cooperate with our intelligence officers. Trump says that I don't see any reason why Russia would interfere in the 2016 election. Some of the news coming out of the Helsinki summit. So if you want to comment about that, our phone number 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And I'm looking at trying to call up the Associated Press reporting, because they've had some of the highlights of the press conference. We missed the opening few minutes of that press conference, so I'm scrambling to get the Associated Press coverage, but I can't pull it up yet. Some emails have come in. Here's an email from Anonymous, who writes, I like the invitation for our intelligence to collude with theirs. And if you were missing what was said there during the Russian portion of that press conference, we had the English translation on our left channel and the Russian words on our right channel. So sorry about that. Some people are listening in mono or only listening to one channel, so you might have missed part of it. But I just want to know what your take is on what you heard of the press conference. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the past few minutes, you can. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Of course, Trump and Putin had their meeting behind closed doors today. After that meeting, they came out and answered several questions, including questions about the indictments of the 12 Russian intelligence officers last week, questions about Syria. We heard
We heard President Trump saying that he wants to see the DNC server, and he's still looking for the 33,000 emails that were lost from Hillary Clinton. In other news, the FCC chairman says Sinclair Broadcast Group's acquisition of Tribune Media will go through a lengthy administrative process that's often viewed as a deal killer. We should hear more about that in just a minute when we go to the NPR News. Sinclair is the conservative media group that wants to buy up Tribune Media, and Sinclair has already been putting conservative-tinged commentaries in its local newscasts around the country on TV stations. So, again, if you want to comment, we've got a few seconds left get a comment from you. David writes this. David sent an email saying that Trump has scrapped the Cyber Czar post, and I'll have to look at that, David. Don't have time to read it on the air. Well, if you want to comment about anything you've heard here the last hour, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about this show on extension 115. And I'll play your comment back tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on WMNF in Tampa. Sean Ginnan is coming up. He's going to be talking about global warming in just a moment. And then at 1 o'clock today, you'll hear executive session. This is WMN.